I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 21st day of September. And it's all things political. Jenna Johnson is our guest this hour, political reporter for the Washington Post, and she has been covering Governor Walker's presidential campaign, which is faltering. He's at less than 1% in yesterday's CNN poll, and reports are that his campaign owes several vendors more than $100,000. Can he recover? Carly Fiorina polling at 15% now. Early in September, she was at 3%. How long can Joe Biden search his soul to determine whether he should run for president, and what would his entrance do to Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders? Yesterday, it was reported that the average American household income is $53,000, 6.5% less than in 2007. Who speaks to that issue the best on the campaign trail? Donald Trump talks about his favorite Bible verse, and he's asked if he would be comfortable with a Muslim president. And Pope Francis will be speaking tomorrow before a joint session of Congress. How political will his speech be? And how important will that speech be? Those are a few of the areas that we'll be covering this hour for All Things Political. Welcoming your phone calls as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter at KDunnShow. Jenna has been the political reporter for The Washington Post for some time. Before that, she covered higher education and youth culture for the paper. She's written about the Pennsylvania State University sex abuse scandal, teen moms who enroll in college, prescription drug abuse, unpaid internships. She's a graduate of the University of Nebraska, so she has strong Midwest roots. Jenna, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Kathleen.
Yeah, our great pleasure. So Governor Walker's poll numbers were released by CNN yesterday, and he's now at less than 1%. What has happened to his campaign?
Well, that is the question that supporters and donors are shaking their heads and asking each other. This collapse has happened in a very short amount of time. He announced his candidacy in mid-July, that was barely 2 months ago, and back then, he seemed like the guy who was going to win the Iowa caucuses and be a front runner for the competition for the nomination. And now he's polling nationally at less than 1% of support. And, you know, a lot of people are still trying to figure out what's going on. A lot of people like to blame this on Donald Trump, taking the scene and attracting attention and hogging media time and things like that. But I think there's also some deeper problems in the Walker campaign. The governor keeps making statements that don't quite make sense and need clarification, and it takes him a few days to say what he really means. One example of this is, he had suggested that he was open to the idea of building a wall along the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
Then had to back off of that and say that's not actually what he meant. Another example is he was asked if the U.S. Should accept more refugees from Syria, and his first answer was to say, well, that's a hypothetical, and hypotheticals don't exist, and I'm not president yet, and so I'm not going to answer that question. And then later came back and said, well, actually, no, we shouldn't accept them. So it's just been one problem after another. The debates were not good for him. The first debate, a lot of people forgot he was even on the stage. His answers didn't fill the whole time slot. He was just very forgettable, especially with that many people on the stage. The second debate, early on, he came in really strong and, started going after Trump and making some strong statements about who he is and what he stands for. But again, he faded into the background. Some supporters like to blame that on CNN for only asking him three questions and not letting him jump in as often. But things have really, really fallen apart. And this latest CNN poll, I think, was really a punch in the gut for people Who thought he could be president?
Right. So there are reports, I think from today, that his campaign owes several vendors more than $100,000. I would imagine money has to be an issue here. He's got a staff of 90 people. You can't keep running a campaign that's expensive like that when you are probably facing donors who don't really want to give you as much money anymore, right?
Well, this is a big question. The campaign hasn't publicly had to say how much money they have and how much money they're spending. So a lot of this is coming, bits and pieces of information from here and there. There are some vendors that say that they're waiting to get paid. Scott Walker himself says that the campaign's paying its bills, it's paying its employees, they're staying on top of that. But the simple matter is, it's really difficult to raise money for someone who's polling so lowly. And, while they might have collected a lot of money over the summer that could keep them alive for a little bit, it's very unclear how much money that is and how quickly they're burning through it and how long they can keep going if they don't get a new influx of money.
On the other hand, the reports are that his favorability ratings are very high in Iowa and quite high nationally. How can you have a campaign that's tanking when your favorability ratings are high?
Well, just because people like you doesn't mean that they're going to vote for you for president. Favorability ratings show that, if people do not like you and you're viewed unfavorably, it's really hard to win them over. And this is kind of seen as a bright spot, an opportunity for Walker that, people in Iowa, they like him. He just has to get them to vote for him. And so he's kind of doubling down on Iowa. For the next several weeks, probably several months, he's going to be just spending as much time in Iowa as he can. He says at least 10 days a month, maybe more than that, because people like him there. He just has to remind them that in addition to liking him, that he thinks that they should also vote for him.
Mm-hmm. You report that Unintimidated PAC, the largest pro-Walker group, over the summer bought more than $7.5 million worth of airtime in Iowa for ads that started last Tuesday. They will run up to caucus day. That's a whole lot of ads. Will those move the numbers?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is another factor that we're kind of waiting to see play out. There are these huge super PACs, aside from the campaigns, that have millions and millions of dollars. The pro Scott Walker super PAC, Unintimidated, has at least $20 million, and they've just now started spending that money. They're putting up ads in Iowa, and later this fall they'll also be doing it in other early primary states. And their message is basically just kind of an introduction to who this person is, what he did in Wisconsin, and what he would do as president. Television ads have much more of a reach, and that could have an impact. There's a lot of money there that hasn't been spent yet.
Mm-hmm. You were with him when he was at Eureka College, Ronald Reagan School in Illinois. He talked about Ronald Reagan, who is his hero, being an eternal optimist. He shares, Scott Walker said, that optimism. How should the, and I'm wondering if there's been a lot of discussion lately about optimistic candidates and hell is coming to America candidates. Does he exude that kind of optimism on the campaign trail? Is that part of the problem, that the Republican electorate is not very optimistic now and would prefer messages of doom and gloom?
Well, who knows? It varies from voter to voter. I think much more than optimism, there's just a general anger at politicians. There's an anger that voters have been voting for Republicans and donating to Republicans and supporting Republicans, helping them get more offices. And they just don't feel like their lives have changed as a result of that. They feel like by now the Republican majorities in Washington should have repealed Obamacare, that they should have stopped the Iran deal, and other things. And that's why we see these outsider candidates like Donald Trump, like Carly Fiorina, like Ben Carson, suddenly doing so well. The fact that they haven't held elected office is something that is really refreshing to a lot of voters. Scott Walker, on the other hand, you know, kind of a boring guy, although he can, you know, he can bring some enthusiasm and some excitement. This guy has been running for office since he was 22. He's held elected office since he was 25. And it's been really difficult for him to try to pitch himself as someone who's also an outsider, just because a lot of voters see him as a typical politician.
You write that as a result of his drop in the polls, Scott Walker has adopted a persona that doesn't square with his low-key demeanor and personality, this tough guy approach, including his recent promises to wreak havoc on Washington, is not a good fit. Was that a noticeable change as you covered him on the campaign trail, this tough guy, and it wasn't working out for him?
Yeah, you know, there was literally this one Monday, a day after Donald Trump had announced his immigration policy, that, you know, suddenly Scott Walker was a new sort of candidate. You know, he was bashing fellow Republicans, something that he never would do previously. He was talking critically about Republicans back home in Wisconsin, you know, saying that he was the one who got them into line and, you know, forced them to make these reforms, that they were too afraid to do so. You know, and from there, he started taking, you know, shots at Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida. He started embracing stances that are perhaps more controversial or conservative than he normally would have. And he started to come across as someone who was fighting so hard to not only keep the supporters he had, but to try to win over some of Trump's supporters. And that line about, you know, I'm going to get in there and wreak havoc on Washington just kind of stunned some of his longtime supporters. It felt a little out of character, a little too aggressive. You know, this is someone who's mellow and boring and, you know, just takes on fights and doesn't compromise and things like that and keeps his head down. And, you know, for some people, this was too much of a change from the candidate they knew.
And the other thing that doesn't seem to be resonating, a big part of his resume, of course, in Wisconsin is taking on the Public Employees Union and winning that battle. He's tried to bring that up again, what he would do to federal unions, what he would do for right to work, making it national, et cetera. It doesn't seem to be resonating. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that he's most known for, and as things have started to not go so well, he's trying to bring it back up and remind people of why they've heard of him. The thing is, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are really frustrated with unions, who are really frustrated with the way that unions work, especially public unions. But, you know, unions aren't doing so well right now. You know, in most states, union membership has really fallen off. A lot of unions just don't have the sort of political pull that they used to. And they're not quite this, you know, while some people can get fired up about it and some people can admire that he took it on, it's not the biggest threat facing a lot of people's lives. There are other issues that they care a lot more about, that they want to hear much more about.
And what are those?
Well, you know, right now immigration is a big issue. You know, a lot of Republicans in early voting states, that's where their anger is directed at. The economy, you know, wages, not keeping up with the bills that people are getting. There's also a lot of frustration with, you know, reforms that have happened under the Obama administration, like the Affordable Care Act. that they want to see changed. You know, but there's a lot of anger out there, and just directing it at unions just isn't quite enough for a lot of voters.
Jenna Johnson is our guest for All Things Political, and we'll welcome phone calls. We started with Governor Scott Walker because she's been covering his campaign for the presidency for quite some time now. I understand that she'll be moving more to the Donald Trump campaign, and Donald Trump, surprise, surprise, said some amazing things. I met the press yesterday. We will talk about those with Jenna. And welcome phone calls, but Walker was, you know, predicted not that long ago to be the probable winner of the Iowa caucuses. He's facing a struggle there, and yesterday's CNN poll shows now that he is at less than 1% in national rankings. What happened to his campaign? We'll talk about other issues as well, but here's our phone number. A couple of you calling in would like to speak to the Walker candidacy, speak to whatever you want politically, because that's what this hour is. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. We have many coming in, and we start with Bob in Neenah. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi to your guest. I didn't catch your name. I apologize.
Jenna. Jenna is her name.
Jenna?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, I'll start off by saying that Walker's approval rating in Iowa is only down to 37%. So he's not even, doesn't even have a majority there. But more and more things are coming out about Walker, how much of a coward he is. When he says he faced, you know, 100,000 people in the Capitol, he never showed his face once in the Capitol. He never confronted any of the protesters. All he did was have his police officers arrest singers and so forth. But he never once showed his face. So he's a blatant coward. It's just plain and simple. And there's many more things I could say, but those are the two high points that I want to stress at this time.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. I don't know what Iowa poll he's referencing. The one I was is the Quinnipiac poll, which showed him at 51%. I think that's a national poll. Do you have more numbers, Jenna?
You know what? There have been, I think his favorability ratings have been highest in polls that come out of Iowa. But those, you know, I mean, usually he's not the most favorable candidate. And in national polls, his favorability is much lower.
I see. And this, what do you make of, does he say this over and over on the campaign trail, or has he dropped this as one of the things that he's campaigning on, this confrontation with protesters in Madison?
Of course, yeah. I mean, this is, most stops he will say something about kind of the heroic acts that he did in Wisconsin in taking on the unions. You know, citing 100,000 protesters is a common one. He also talks about death threats that his family endured. You know, at one point on the trail, he said, you know, what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger, and that he learned that firsthand. But I think also Bob's question gets to another point about Scott Walker, and it's that he's a really polarizing figure. For a long time in Wisconsin, people either loved him or hated him. There was no in-between. There wasn't much middle ground at all. And on the campaign trail, when he's asked about dysfunction in Washington or gridlock in Washington and what he thinks the parties need to do to work better, he'll actually answer with a different sort of answer and say, well, what people want more than compromise is to see stuff get done and see stuff that's pushed through. And, you know, I mean, the last couple of months we've seen Walker's approval rating in Wisconsin, where he's governor, continue to fall. And, you know, so, I mean, it's difficult to be selling yourself across the country when there's problems with your reputation in the state where, that you lead.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that normal that a lot of governors find their reputations faltering if they're running for president because they're just not doing the job at home?
Definitely, definitely. I covered Maryland politics for a while before I moved to this beat. And Martin O'Malley, as soon as he started spending a little bit more time on the road, and as another governor's race got going in his state, with Republicans attacking his record, you know, he saw his approval rating fall also.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bob, for your call. Jackie and Eagle, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And hi to you, Jenna.
Hello.
I have a little bit of a different perspective, and I'm not as well-versed as Jenna is, who's following Scott Walker. But the last debate, I didn't see any way that any of the candidates could have voiced opinions about issues without the CNN moderators calling on them. I really didn't. And as far as the Canadian border, that was a question that was asked of Scott Walker, someone that was attending one of his rallies. I believe the question was, would you consider closing the Canadian border? And he said, well, it's been mentioned. I haven't really thought about it. And, of course, the media went to town with that one. Third, I really believe the media is choosing our next president. I don't really know at this time who I'd want it to be, but that's been true in every election that I voted in. And to give you an example, Bridgegate was used to destroy Chris Christie. Well, he seems to have come back somewhat. My prediction is the next candidate to be destroyed is Carly Fiorina. And it's just is really a shame because some of the attributes I think that you need to be able to help our country at this difficult point, and I'm minimum income, I'm elderly, so I have time to kind of keep up on things. Changing your mind about things, to me, is a flexibility that we need to be able to react to situations. And to tout that as he said this, now he says that, I just don't understand. And, of course, the latest poll numbers by CNN, they ran the last debate. So those are just my concerns, my consideration.
Thanks.
But I'm trying to be open-minded. So
thank you, Jackie.
You.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Jenna.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jackie. And you're not the first person to voice this opinion. There's a lot of distrust of the media out there and a lot of frustration with, you know, with cable news being on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with Twitter buzzing every minute of the day, with news traveling faster than it ever has. You know, some people feel like there's over-coverage of some things and other coverage, under-coverage of other things. Just a slight clarification on the Canadian border. That came up. Governor Walker was on a Sunday talk show, Meet the Press, and was talking about border security and said that, you know, we needed to secure all of our borders. And Chuck Todd asked him, well, what about the Canadian border? And Governor Walker came back and said, you know, that came up at a town hall that I was at, and I think it's a legitimate idea. And, you know, those words, legitimate idea, were attached to the Canadian wall and remained that way for at least a day. With the campaign saying that he was open to the idea, that he wasn't calling for it, but that he was open to the idea, and that it took a full day for him to come out and say, actually, no, I absolutely do not want this. It's not something I want to do. So, I mean, you know, there are a lot of candidates. There are a lot of moving parts. And, gosh, you know, a debate with 11 people that was 3 hours long. Congrats to anyone who made their way all the way through it. But I think there are a lot of viewers out there who are frustrated that so much of the debate focused on just talking about Donald Trump and that not enough of it was spent talking about the issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, Donald Trump added again on Meet the Press yesterday, asked by Chuck Todd if he would be comfortable with a Muslim president. Part of his answer was, I mean, some people have said it already happened, frankly. What's this guy doing? How can you get away with saying things like that? I just don't quite understand.
Well, you know, I mean, this is in the news again because last week Donald Trump was up in New Hampshire and he was at a town hall and, threw open the rally to questions, and a man in the audience, very first question, said that the United States has a problem and that problem is Muslims. And from there, said that the president wasn't even an American, that the president is Muslim. And Donald Trump got in trouble for not correcting him, and since then has kind of, walked back his answer and kind of clarified himself a little bit more. But here's the thing. There have been polls that have found that a large number of Donald Trump's supporters, do not think that President Obama is an American. They truly believe that he's not a Christian. And there's a sizable number of people. While that might sound crazy to some, there are some people who truly believe that. And I don't know why Donald Trump says what he does, but perhaps one of the reasons that he kind of dances around this issue is because he has so many supporters who firmly believe what that man said when he asked him that question during that rally.
Right. Well, that says something about ignorance and trying to enlighten people or not, right? It's just incredible. John in Milwaukee, hi.
The Walker campaign has taken the new biography of Nixon, Being Nixon, and Joe McGinnis's book, The Selling of the President, 1968, they've welded these two, and they've tanked. I think that the vast majority of people around this country do not want to elect someone, A, who doesn't have a reflexive mind, who has such passionate hatreds of people who are just trying to earn a living and to have basic representation, arbitration rights, and guarantees on the job. And organized labor is only at 8.5% nationally representing workers. And I think that this is one of the problems that you really get at. Nobody wants to bring up the fact that he didn't complete college, but what college is supposed to teach you is to have a broader mind, to respect all people, to be caring and compassionate. I think we've only had a few leaders in our history, Eugene Victor Debs and President Kennedy, and in an odd type of way, Lyndon Johnson, that have achieved it. But I really think that that's what we're questing for in 2015 and 2016. It's not surprising to me that his numbers have tanked.
Jenna.
Yes, well, a lot of really interesting and reflective points there. One thing that you brought up is Scott Walker not having a college degree. And this is something that continues to come up and to be discussed. If he were to be elected, he would be the first president since, I believe, Truman, and perhaps there are some historians out there who might correct me, but I believe it's since Truman. And what does that mean? For a while there, not having a college degree was kind of seen as an asset for Scott Walker. He was running a campaign as an average guy, who wants to make America better for his two sons. And that a lot of Americans don't have a college degree, that, they learned about the world and the school of hard knocks, and that it was something that people could respect and relate to in a way. But then there was you know, the flip side of that is that, you know, a lot of people who run for president are highly educated, you know, who have spent a lot of time having very high-level discussions about foreign policy and domestic policy and things like that. And I think time after time, there are a lot of voters out there who just didn't think that Scott Walker was the smartest candidate. A lot of them thought that was okay and that he could surround himself with very smart people. But there were others who felt like that wasn't okay. So it's a very interesting dynamic, and it's been an interesting one to see voters react to.
Thanks very much, John, for your call. Carly Fiorina, that woman can talk, can't she? She was really impressive at the debate. She does her homework. Now in second place, 15% polling now. She started the month at 3%. I guess if you know your stuff and presented well, even though her past will be scrutinized, I'm sure, as how carefully she ran and successfully or not she ran Hewlett-Packard, she was impressive on stage.
You know, she really wowed a lot of people. And the interesting thing about Carly Fiorina is months ago, we would hear from activists especially in New Hampshire, but also in Iowa, and they would say, you know who's spending a lot of time here and really impressing people? Carly Fiorina. She is just really sharp. We really like her. You know, you would go to these big forums and summits, and she would be one of 20 people getting up and talking. And she would have everyone laughing. You know, she would be, having everyone applauding. She really knows how to fire up a crowd. But yet her poll numbers weren't moving. And we didn't really understand why. And part of it is a lot of people just didn't know her and hadn't had any exposure to her. So after the first debate, when she wasn't on the main stage, but still did kind of a standout job in a smaller, earlier debate, she saw a little bump then. And then after the debate last week, she's seen a large bump. The thing is, though, now that she's one of the front runners, you know, according to the latest polls, that opens her up to criticism. A lot of the other candidates had kind of left her alone. They didn't want to be seen as perhaps going after a woman who wasn't polling that highly. But she's now polling higher. And, she's someone that they're likely going to have to confront. So it'll be interesting to see what we see as far as the discussion about her business career,
right,
and her 2010 run for Senate.
She lost pretty badly, didn't she, to Barbara Boxer?
She did. She won the Republican primary and run a pretty, expensive campaign against Barbara Boxer in California and lost pretty badly. And it was a pretty nasty election with, pretty a lot of deep research on both sides and accusations flying and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Claire in Madison. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen. I hope you don't mind a switch of subjects.
Go right ahead.
I was at the Fighting Bob La Follette political rally in Madison on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
That's a progressive movement. Started, in honor of Bob La Follette, a famous Wisconsinite. And there were approximately, this is my guess, Kathleen, about 3,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
And just an observation, I saw so many Bernie Sanders buttons and T-shirts, and I saw literally no Hillary buttons or T-shirts, which I thought was really interesting. And I have a theory, too. I know that Bernie is gaining in popularity. I think the Democratic Party bigwigs, the people in power at the top, I think they're terrified that Bernie Sanders is going to forge ahead of Hillary, and they don't really want that because Bernie is beholden to no one. And they're secretly hoping that just in case Hillary implodes, I think they're kind of hoping that maybe Joe Biden will get in the race.
Hmm.
And I'd like your guest thoughts on that.
Thanks, Claire, for your call. Jenna.
Well, I wish I knew if Joe Biden was getting into the race or not. I think a lot of people wish they knew if that was happening or not. It would definitely be really change that dynamic. As far as we know, he has not made up his mind. He's still reflecting on it, reflecting with his family. And I have to think perhaps also looking at early poll numbers and seeing just what sort of chance he would have if he would get in. But it would definitely, you know, just like Donald Trump really wasn't expected on the Republican side, where I spend most of my time reporting, Bernie Sanders has really surprised a lot of people. I was at the rally that he held in Madison, gosh, I guess a couple months ago now, mm-hmm. With 10,000 people, which at that point was the biggest rally that he had had. And just seeing that much excitement and enthusiasm in one place, you know, I mean, he's really kind of lit a fire, and so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
The numbers came out over the weekend of what the average American household income is, and it's $53,000, 6.5% less than not that long ago, 2007. Obviously, that affects a whole lot of Americans. It's no wonder that Bernie Sanders is gaining some traction. He speaks to that issue.
Yeah, he does. There's a lot of frustration out there. You know, I mean, the economy is doing better. You know, the recession is behind us. And yet people don't feel like their lives are getting better year after year. And on both sides of the equation, both with Republicans and with Democrats, people want to see their lives getting better. And Bernie Sanders says a lot of things that other Democrats are cautious to say or to promise. You know, universal child care, you know, a higher minimum wage, you know, paid sick leave, things that would obviously, for many workers, they look at that and they can see how that would change their lives. You know, but actually getting some of those things passed through Washington right. nowadays would be a bit of a challenge.
Jenna Johnson is our guest for All Things Political today. She's a political reporter who's covering the 2016 presidential campaign for the Washington Post, and she has been covering Governor Scott Walker as he continues to not do very well in the polls. She'll be switching, not exclusively to another candidate, but she'll be covering more of the other candidates and still paying a close attention to what's happening with the Walker campaign. So we're talking about why it is that his numbers really have tanked in the last month and whether or not, considering the money that he's spending in Iowa and the amount of time he has in Iowa, he'll be able to pull out a win and that will change the trajectory of his campaign. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. The Pope is going to be speaking to the joint session of Congress tomorrow. I don't know if you saw E.J. Dionne's column on the Pope. His words will matter, E.J. says, and Francis will have an enormous impact both on American politics and on politics inside the American Catholic Church. Will his words matter to American politics, to the campaigns of everybody who's running for president? He's a pretty radical guy, EJ writes, on some of these issues, spiritually and politically, far more radical, he says, than most Americans, including most liberals. So how will people take to him? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter @KDunnShow, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Jenna. 800-486-8655 is the number, and we go to Kevin in Baraboo. Hi.
Hey, yeah, hi. Good afternoon, Kathleen and Jenna. I just had one simple question, and that is that is the poll dropped by Walker simply because he's not lying anymore? I mean, he's kind of saying exactly what he's going to do, which is quite a bit different than when he was elected governor of Wisconsin in 2010. He never really said that he was going to go out and destroy as many unions as he could. And people were kind of shocked by that when he did that. And even a lot of his supporters basically said, I didn't know he was going to do that. But then we had the recall, and he won that. But that's my question, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin.
You know, I mean, this is something that has long frustrated Democrats in Wisconsin, in that they feel very blindsided by a lot of the things that Scott Walker has done. And he himself has said that on a lot of these things, he needs to better communicate and communicate earlier in the process. And, you know, as far as what that's been, you know, how that's been impacting him now, keep in mind that, you know, a lot of voters don't know the 17, I guess now it's 16 Republicans running for president quite as well as the governor of their own state or, you know, a politician who's been targeting them very closely for a longer period of time. You know, I mean, a lot of what people know about a candidate is, you know, maybe a few things that they've picked up on the news, maybe an impression from watching the debate. So don't quite know how to fully answer that question.
Let's talk about the Pope for a moment, who's going to speak tomorrow. It should be highly interesting before the U.S. Congress. E.J. Dionne wrote, he's a guy who's got a lot of insights, I think. Friend of his, Father Tom Rees, who we've had on the show and are trying to get for Wednesday, actually. E.J. writes that his friend Father Tom Rees observed that Francis preaches the gospel, not the catechism. The gospel is radical will take many people aback, and challenging our assumptions is what Francis is here to do. What are the expectations for tomorrow, and do you imagine that some of what the Pope will say will be considered radical?
Likely. I would be surprised if that doesn't happen. For a long time, you know, many Catholics have been Republican. And a big part of that has been because of abortion. I mean, that has been a major activist issue, a major rallying issue. For a lot of Catholics, and it was something that a lot of Republicans were able to seize on. You know, you now have a Pope who, you know, is a Jesuit and who, a lot of times, while not, you know, taking a different stance on issues, emphasizes some things more than others. And I have to think that might, rub some people the wrong way if they don't agree with that reading or that set of priorities. So I think it's going to be fascinating. Here in D.C., to be quite honest, a lot of the talk has been about just the crazy traffic
I'm
that
sure.
we're going to be having
right.
in the next couple days as people descend on the city. You know, but I was out this weekend and, you know, churches have banners up, you know, welcoming the Holy Father to the city. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, what to expect and what not to expect. And so we'll have to see.
Yeah. Let's go next to Evan in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hey there. A couple quick points and I'll take my response off the air. Firstly, I think, the way that Trump is coming out and attacking political correctness is inspiring a lot of underlying offensive thoughts in a lot of folks that would normally vote Republican, and I think that it's shedding a really bad light on a lot of Republican supporters. And I think that for the most part, political correctness has its place, and it's to provide comfort in tense situations. And it's got its. There are times that it it gets overplayed, but he is just taking such a low level with the political correctness that it's becoming uncomfortable on the other end of the spectrum. And I think that he's affecting the voter base in a very negative way and bringing out the wrong people. And then secondly, on Walker, I think that it's the fact that he never finished college. For some people, I see the ability to see themselves in that. But at the same time, I want somebody smarter than myself running the country, because these are really complex issues. So that's what I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Evan. Jenna.
Thanks, Evan. This has been the big appeal of Donald Trump, is that he's not politically correct. I remember reading somewhere comparing Donald Trump to, your drunk uncle at Thanksgiving and, kind of the outrageous comments that can be said. Is resonating with a lot of voters who are eager to see someone who says the things that they're thinking in their head but are afraid to say out loud. Going forward, I guess we'll just have to see what percentage of that population actually, can get behind a lot of the things that Donald Trump is saying.
Jake in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, Jenna. I watched most of the debate on Fox and most of the debate on CNN, and I agree with you. It's too many people, it's too long, and I also find it to be almost totally useless as far as getting any information. Do you have any other suggestions for a better format?
I wish I did. I feel like that's a bit above my pay grade. The challenge with these debates is that the Republican field is so large. And how do you find a fair way to, reduce down that crowd and get a small enough group that you can have a smart discussion about issues? I was at one candidate forum in New Hampshire right before the first debate, and each candidate had literally a minute or two to answer a couple rapid-fire questions, and they were talking as quickly as they could, like robots almost, and you just kind of have to wonder what the value is in that. But at the same time, originally this debate last week was supposed to be 10 people on stage, and at the last minute, CNN changed the rules and added an 11th person who had been doing well in the polls, and that was Carly Fiorina, who went on to be declared by many people to be the winner of the debate. So with such a big field that is changing so quickly, I don't envy the network executives who have to decide who gets invited and who doesn't get invited and how to structure it.
Yeah. Let's try and take two people who have been on hold for a while and at least get their comments. Don in Dairyland.
Yes. I believe the reason that Scott Walker isn't doing too well is for the simple fact that he's running for president as a dictator. He's dictated everything he's wanted to accomplish in this state at the expense of everybody else, and hasn't relied on people's well-being in the process. That's my comment. I'll take.
All right. Thanks, John. And let's get one more comment. Eric in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Walker's big bold ideas are just old hat. They're not. There's nothing big. There's nothing bold about it. The people of Iowa see what he's all about. They don't want him as president, and the people of Wisconsin surely know what he's all about, and we don't want him president. And he keeps talking about the 100,000 protesters that he took on. Those 100,000 protesters are nurses and policemen and firemen and teachers and steel workers and municipal workers. They're blue-collar, middle-of-the-road American people that he took on and stole their money and gave it to people like Diane Hendricks of ABC Corporation.
Thank you very much, Eric, for your call. As you can see, a lot of division, people on one side or the other with Scott Walker in Wisconsin. Jenna, thank you very much for being with us. It was great, all things political, and happy campaign, endless season to you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Our thanks to Scott Myers and KP Whaley for producing this show. Thanks for your calls.